Welcome to another episode of Mission Compliance, Unleashing Growth Potential for Defense Contractors. In today's episode, we continue down the road of understanding CMMC, its regulations, and controls. Up next is MA.L2-3.7.5. Require multi-factor authentication to establish non-local maintenance sessions via external network connections and terminate such connections when non-local maintenance is complete. That's a mouthful. We'll break down what this control means, why it matters, and how it impacts your organization's cybersecurity posture. We'll also provide practical insights and strategies for achieving compliance and securing your systems effectively. So whether you're a defense contractor aiming to win more contracts or simply someone interested in bolstering your cybersecurity knowledge, you're in the right place. Do you feel lucky, punk? We're joined today, as always, by Mike Frieder, President of On-Call Compliance Solutions and a CMMC Professional Assessor. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Hey, always a pleasure, Roman.
And it does look a little different because you are on your phone today. So if our viewers out there on YouTube are looking at it and be like, Mike looks different, it's because he's holding his phone.
That's right. Sorry for the angle, Mike Frieder is on the move.
He is mobile. So Mike, this week in the middle of that long-winded control, to boil it down, we're talking about MFA and non-local maintenance. Now we know that MFA is a lot of people's quote unquote favorite topic, because I can't count the number of emails that I get back from whenever we have a compliance control having to do with MFA, people complaining about not wanting to install MFA and it being such a hassle and an extra step to get into your computer. But that's what we're talking about today, MFA and non-local maintenance. So why is this control important?
This control is really important because it addresses a side of access to CUI and access to systems that most people do not think about. And this is one of the controls that, when you read it, you don't necessarily really get it. You don't really understand what it's about. And the reason is because you kind of think to yourself, well, what in the world is a non-local maintenance session? And then, what happens is a lot of people don't really kind of put two and two together on this one. So that's what this podcast is all about, is to kind of make some sense of this. So when they talk about non-local maintenance sessions, I'll give you a couple of examples. One of those examples is if you are outsourcing your IT and that IT provider has something on their systems, something on the client's system, your system, that allows for them to do maintenance, which virtually all companies do this, even if it's internal IT. They've all got some kind of maintenance tools loaded on those machines to make things like automatic updates happen, to make patching happen, to make your antivirus roll out, to make your SIEM solution deployed and make sure that it's actually there on a periodic basis and functioning correctly. These are all automated tools, generally cloud-based, and they are providing non-local maintenance. So what's the control about? Well, it's to make sure that your IT provider or any tool that is being used for non-local maintenance has to have multi-factor authentication enabled in order for that to be an acceptable tool inside of a CUI handling system. Now, for a lot of defense contractors, this is a really, really big, complex control because they don't control their IT companies, right? The IT company says, hey, we're going to come manage your IT. You're going to pay us X number of dollars per user per month or whatever have you. And we're going to deliver this like black box of IT solutions. Very, very normal. Well, now the defense contractor has to go back to the IT company and do like real research and go, well, hold on a second. Tell me what the tools are that you're going to actually put on my systems because we handle sensitive information. And so, the old saying is the Trojan horse is the one best disguised as somebody who's going to be a great helper. And of course, the biggest helper of all when it comes to information is the IT guy, right? The person who is trusted already to come in and give you the support that you need and the tools you need to run your systems. So this control mandates that you have done the research, have done the documentation, and have policies and procedures in place with that provider or with your internal IT team to make sure that they know that you've got to have multi-factor authentication enabled on all of your tools that are used for non-local maintenance. Now, what's the difference between local maintenance and non-local maintenance? Well, local maintenance is maintenance that is done inside of the network. So what this control would purport to say is, well, if you're using a local maintenance tool and it's right there on your network, that may not have to have multi-factor authentication. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. You know what? I'm going to leave that as a big black box of mystery. I'm going to talk about specifically this control in the podcast. We can talk about whether MFA is required over the network or not, because again, most of your maintenance tools should not be doing anything with CUI, right? But again, we can't guarantee that. So we need to be careful about what we say. But again, the idea is if you're accessing CUI over a network, even a local network, MFA is required. But if we're talking about maintenance tools oftentimes do not interact with CUI. They are security protection assets. So as a result, that might be okay if it's local. But again, I would want to get, a little more hands-on, a little bit more information from any client before I really gave a firm answer like that. But that's a direction. There's a hint, hint. So again, going back to what the control is all about, it's all about the idea that multi-factor authentication has to be in place anytime anybody is connecting into a system where they could potentially gain access to CUI. Even if that tool is not supposed to interact with CUI, still, if it's accessing a system that CUI may be stored, processed, or transmitted in, well, then MFA is a requirement. And that's what this control is all about, Roman. It's all about making sure that defense contractors leverage these controls, well, to control access to CUI. And that does include maintenance tools, particularly because a lot of them are not local. They are cloud-based, or they may be run from a managed IT service provider's network, or who knows where they might be run from. But man, if it's non-local, right, you've got to be sure that multi-factor authentication is enabled on 100% of accounts that can run these tools. Or run these tools on your network. Again, multi-factor authentication, probably one of the strongest security things that we can put in place when it comes to protecting CUI.
Right. So this second question, if you follow along with our control episodes, we ask what the key assessment objectives are, but we're going to do it a little different today because Mike is on his phone. He's not looking directly at the objectives. I am. So I'm going to read them to Mike, and then he's going to talk about them the way he normally does. And Mike, let me ask you how you want to handle this, because I'm looking at the objectives and there's two on this one. And then it's got the second column that's got the implemented and then per the IT operations policy. So do you want me to read one and you can talk about it and then the next one, or read both? And then you can talk about the whole
Yeah, I tell
thing.
you what, let's just read the first objective, and then we'll talk about how we would get it implemented. I know there's a stock answer there, but I'll just freestyle
Yeah, perfect. Thanks for bearing with us, those who are listening and
it.
watching to that as we figure this out on the fly. So the first assessment objective here is determine if multi-factor authentication is used to establish non-local maintenance sessions via external network connections.
Cool. So let's take an example of a typical support tool, like let's say TeamViewer or Splashtop or any number of tools that we might have going on that allow for a remote technician to manage our network, install patches, provide technical support, all that kind of stuff. So under that circumstance, what would need to happen is you would need to give evidence that that TeamViewer or Splashtop, tool that they are using to do that remote access has multi-factor authentication required in order for that person to log in and gain access to your workstation and perform that maintenance. So what you need to do is you would need to, because this is a determine assessment objective, you would just need to give a demonstration of logging into your maintenance tool. Maybe it's Splashtop, maybe it's TeamViewer. Show the assessor that multi-factor authentication is required, and then they can check that box that they have determined that yes, multi-factor authentication is in fact required in order to allow non-local maintenance using that tool. So that's how we would meet that control, and that's a good example of how it would be done and determined. All right, and what's the next one?
And the next one is determine if non-local maintenance sessions established via external network connections are terminated when non-local maintenance is complete.
Yep. So the next thing is we're going to have to prove to the assessors that when maintenance is complete, that there is some manner or method of terminating that session. So what will we do? Well, we would open up the settings of our tool. Let's again go back to like TeamViewer or Splashtop as an example. And we would open up that tool and we would show the settings that say, hey, if the session is idle or if the session lasts longer than X amount of time, terminate the session. So other things, and again, this has got to be in that non-local maintenance tool that established the connection. So again, we're really leaning on our IT company pretty hard here to make sure their tools work the way they're supposed to. So keep that in mind as well. That's a very, very important thing. Again, one of the things that we like to highlight is this concept of the shared responsibility matrix. So again, in the shared responsibility matrix between you and your IT company that you're going to have to build, you're going to need to make sure that they have these things accounted for in the shared responsibility matrix. They have a responsibility to make sure that sessions are terminated. So if you don't have that, here's your cue to go build that out. If you're struggling to figure all that out, might be a good time to call OnCall because, of course, first off, we have a completely done for everybody, shared responsibility matrix for our managed IT services for defense contractors. We've already got this stuff figured out, and so we can just hand that over to you, which we do all of our client onboardings. But again, this is something that you will have to demonstrate, show, prove, et cetera. And again, you're going to need your help from your IT folks. Now, if you have an in-house IT department, that gets a little easier. You're still going to have to prove that because, again, a lot of these tools they're going to use are cloud-based, not abnormal. So, again, we're going to have to be able to prove that to them. Sorry, could you, let me make sure I'm getting this right. Could you read me that assessment objective one more time? Let me make sure that I've fully answered this.
Yes, the second assessment objective is determine if non-local maintenance sessions established via external network connections are terminated when non-local maintenance is
That's
complete.
right. So again, we just need to get with our internal IT people if we have internal IT, and we just need to verify that yes, our tools actually work like that. Or that they for instance, sometimes you have local remote access to machines. But again, if those machines do store, process, or transmit CUI, even if they're local but they're on a network, well then there's something required there too. So again, it really depends on how that maintenance tool functions, and we'd have to kind of look at that individually or on an individual basis for the client. But again, those are the things that I think are very much important. Roman, do you think I've answered that pretty adequately?
I do, and I don't know the best way to read the rest of what it says here, so I'm just gonna do it. You mentioned it right here. It says implemented. Non-local access is not possible without MFA. That's what this is supposed to look like when it's implemented. And then it also says, per the IT operations policy, non-local maintenance sessions should be terminated upon completion of the maintenance session. A fail-safe is in place to automatically terminate idle sessions after 30 minutes as a failsafe.
Yeah, and that's a phenomenal answer, and I think also it brings up, another great part of solvency for this control, which is you should have policies, written policies, where all of these things are clearly defined. So again, it's not good enough to just have your system set up correctly. You have to have your system able to, you have to have your system able to be documented in an IT operations policy so that you can demonstrate to an assessor the way it's supposed to be set up per policy. So another very, very important thing to keep in mind is that, you've got to have this stuff documented. You've got to have their settings. You've got to have all of those things in a way that will allow us to be able to demonstrate both in writing and documentation and via system settings. And it's all got to match up that everything goes well together. So lots and lots of things to get figured out.
All right, at least for the time being, my job reading is done. So what are the potential difficulties, if any, of enacting this one in an organization?
I think that there's two levels of difficulty. So there's a level of difficulty for the in-house IT folks, and then there's another one for the outsourced IT folks. So the easier one to cover, we'll just kind of flip-flop here. We'll do the internal IT folks. The internal IT folks, I think this is not a really hard control to to comply with. Because again, whoever's managing compliance, we can go straight to our IT person, IT department, and we can ask them the answers to this, ask for demonstrations, et cetera. That I think is pretty straightforward and easy. Oftentimes I will share with you internal IT, unless it's very mature. A lot of times they don't have multi-factor authentication turned on some of their tools. By the way, like the silliest thing you can do, you should definitely have it turned on. But for whatever reason, more often than not, maybe because they just don't know any better, some of those settings come defaulted to off in most platforms, and it is on the IT person to switch multi-factor authentication to on. I do hope in the future that these vendors cut that kind of stuff out and they just say, look, for a security purpose, we don't want our clients getting hacked. So we're going to instead just default to those things being on. But again, I would really make sure you get demonstrations and check that out. Another challenge for internal IT is what I call tool splurge, excuse me, tool surge, which IT departments, depending upon how big they are, tend to have a lot of different tools. So remember, you need to make sure all of your tools have that multi-factor authentication capability. And I hate to say it, but if it doesn't, you may have to get rid of them. You may have to swap them out. This day and age, I don't see very many IT tools, where there's no solution with MFA on the market. I think we're doing pretty good on that. There is a solution to it, but again, if for some reason your maintenance tools don't have multi-factor authentication in order to get into them, well, then we need to figure that out. Okay, now for my outsourced folks, this one's a little more challenging. And the reason is probably because you were already resource challenged to begin with. That's why you outsourced. So whoever is in charge of compliance is going to have to go to the external IT provider, and they're going to have to basically say, hey, wait a minute, hold up. You are going to need to tell me about your tools, and you're going to have that conversation. And I got to tell you, some IT vendors out there get really, really protective about their set. They think you're leaving them as a client. They think that they're trying to figure something out. They may wrap it in a security veil and say, hey, we don't talk about our tools because, from a security perspective, garbage. Asking if you have MFA and to prove it on the tools that they are using should be something that no IT vendor has any concern over. I would, in fact, like a client to ask us that question because it just shows that they are security minded and care. So again, I think that there are some less mature MSPs out there that get oddly protective when people ask them about the solutions that they're putting in place on your systems. Fortunately, those are pretty restricted down to really, really small IT vendors, generally speaking, or MSPs. And to be honest with you, if you're asking that question, they don't have a pretty straightforward answer. That might be reason enough to go, wait a minute, well, are you really still capable of handling my needs as a defense contractor? Maybe you need a bigger company like OnCall to come in and help you manage your IT and understand the defense industry that you're a part of, right? A little bit more mature provider. These are just typical everyday questions that, a project manager may need to answer. And well, if they're a really small MSP and they don't even have a project manager and they can't answer these questions, then that might be a sign that you're going to have a very difficult time getting certified and meeting these requirements without an MSP that understands DFARS, NIST, and CMMC. So again, that I think could be a significant difficulty. And then there's just the time in researching and documentation of what your IT person's tools are. Again, this is kind of where it comes down to. There's a real difference between your average MSP, IT company, what have you, VAR, MSP, and someone who is in the defense industry like we are, understands this stuff, and does this every day. We know how to answer these questions. We already have shared responsibility matrices, customized to each client. Like, we get it. We know how to do this stuff. So I think from that perspective, it's just something you have to understand. That could be a friction point with your IT service provider. And boy, if you find out that one of their tools doesn't have MFA before it's going and accessing your system, you've got to demand that they swap that out. And that's a whole ball of bees. That's a hornet's nest waiting to be kicked over because usually, IT providers don't just have their tools on one client. They've got them on dozens of clients. And for them to switch out tools just for you, that's a serious friction point. So again, I think that there can be a lot of difficulties. And the most important difficulty is you just don't see it coming. Unless you've done this before, the fact that you even have to go about this stuff is perhaps maybe something that, you just don't see coming. And I think It just like everything, it takes time. We got to, have serious effort around it. And it really makes a lot of sense to go with a provider like OnCall who already has all of this stuff figured out, and it's all we do. It's just one more control where, the noose starts tightening around those people who are not dealing with a lot of defense clients and don't have a purpose-built solution stack for those people. So, yeah, I think there can be a lot of difficulty for those folks who are outsourcing. There's a little bit of difficulty for the folks that are insourcing. Again, they're just bigger, more mature, have more resources. But still, making sure those settings are set up the way they should be and getting evidence of that, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for this control room.
All right, if you've been with us for it's kind of unbelievable, 129 episodes now, you know the drill. We've done the three questions and now it's silly question time. And for this week's silly question, Mike, I know you're more of a dog person than a cat person, but this question made me laugh, so we're going to go with it. What's worse? So it's an either or situation. What's worse? Forgetting to turn off a remote session or realizing it's still open and your cat walked across the keyboard?
Oh man, they sure go hand in hand, right? We don't have a problem with catwalking across the keyboard if our systems are configured correctly. Which one is worse? I don't know. I think the cat's worse because I'm just not a cat guy, to be honest with you. And cats do diabolical evil stuff like that. I mean, I feel like a cat is just born to click the wrong button. So I think the cat is probably the worst one in this example.
You know, I think I'm at the point in my life. I've thought about this a weird amount, a lot. Where I think where I've always been a dog person. I grew up with both. You know, we had cats and dogs in the house. I think I'm at the point in my life right now where I'm like, you know what? Cats aren't so bad. They're relatively low maintenance. As long as you feed them, they take care of themselves. They're just like, you know, I don't need a lot of attention. Just go away. Let me do my thing. That's kind of what cats are. So it's like, hey, you know, I'm okay if you want to do you, because I want to do me over here. You know, with two separate existences in the same space, it's fine. You know, I'm at the point in my life where I get it.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, the independence of a cat is undebatable and undeniable. And, it certainly is a lot of work to take care of a dog, as you and I have spoken about on many, many occasions. They're great, great loyal friends, but boy, they let you know when they need you. My dog will come over and he will just stick his face in my arms when I'm working too late. And he wants attention. And cats, yeah, I don't know, you can just shoo him away. It's fine,
Yeah, no, both my sister and my parents have good dogs, but they're very, very needy for attention. They want all the attention. And you just had to almost, if it weren't for our great video editors, ha had to almost re-record an entire video because your dog barked through the duration of the video,
Oh
the
my gosh,
entire time.
We do podcasts on a certain day of the week here, if you follow along, and we can't do any recording or podcasts on Tuesdays. Why? Because the lawn crew shows up on Tuesdays at my house, and it's the worst thing because they show up and the dog just barks nonstop for like 30, 45 minutes while these people are here. Why? Probably because he just wants to go out and meet them. But again, he's a watchdog. He's a great dog. He's got some German Shepherd in him, and they're very protective of boundaries, and at the end of the day, he just that's what he does, man. So there's no, yeah, fortunately, I learned something actually on that video, which is that my primary microphone that I do meetings with has amazing sound cancellation. You can't tell that I even have a dog, but the microphone that we use for the YouTube and the podcast video recording. Sorry, the podcast usually goes for sound canceling.
Yeah.
The primary microphone that I use in video recording for the YouTube channel, that microphone has no sound canceling. It's just a nice high quality but dumb microphone. It has no active noise cancellation. So, very, very interesting. I think we're actually building I'm building a new studio that should be done in the new year over I'm moving I'm building a new house. And there's some serious purpose-built space for recording in that, and I think I'm going to have to look into some sound-canceling microphone technology for Studio 3.0, if you will.
There
So
you go.
yeah, learned a lot. If you want to know how to run a podcast, I don't know that I would follow our advice, but we will talk about the trials and tribulations Recording on the run, noise canceling microphones, dogs barking throughout recording. We have done it all.
And that wraps up another great episode of Mission Compliance. We hope our discussion today has provided you with valuable insights, practical strategies, and inspiration to navigate the ever-evolving world of defense. We'd like to thank Mike for joining us and talking about the very important topic of MFA during non-local maintenance sessions. Thanks, Mike.
Oh man, always a pleasure, Roman. I have so much fun on this podcast with you, and getting the education, the information out to everybody. It's just something that we take a lot of pride in around here. So thanks for doing it.
I mean, I certainly hope you do. If you didn't, we'd done 129 episodes now. That'd be pretty miserable if we didn't like it.
Well, my wife does say I'm pretty stubborn.
And well, but the conversation does not end here. We encourage you to continue exploring these topics and connect with us via our social media channels. Share your thoughts, ask questions, and engage with fellow listeners using the hashtag Mission Compliance Podcast. If they haven't already, what should they do, Mike?
Well, they should like, subscribe, and definitely tell a fellow friend in the defense industry because you know what? CMMC is right around the corner, and it's something that we're getting a lot more very scared phone calls about lately. Contractors who think they can just kind of call us and pay for a CMMC certification, not having a clue what kind of efforts are involved here. So don't let your buddy at the defense contractor next door wind up like that. We can help them, introduce them to the podcast, our YouTube channel, where again, for free, we educate them, talk about it, and you know what? We make this stuff not so bad.
You mentioned that CMMC is right around the corner. By the time this episode comes out, I believe the proposed date for it to be enacted is November 10th, correct?
That's right. Can you believe we are less than 20 days away?
By the time this episode comes out, that date will have passed. So get on it, because by the time you're hearing this, CMMC is now alive. It's active. It's a thing. So we are telling you. It's time. The time is now. There's no more waiting.
That's right.
But you heard Mike in the first part of that. Make sure to like, subscribe, and click on your favorite podcast platform so that you always know when new episodes like this one are released. We truly appreciate it. If on top of all that, you could also take a moment to rate and review the show. Your feedback helps us to continue to bring you thought-provoking episodes and high-quality content. Join us next time as we delve further into the dynamic world of defense, security, and industry innovation. Until then, take care, stay informed, and make compliance your mission. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.